Markish.
I like this kind of party.
The Score senior football expert.
Once you put all the evidence that we have together, that's the bottom line.
Pro Football Weekly, Shaw Media, and Westwood One.
It goes deep. Hub does too.
Analyzing the Bears and the NFL.
This was an ongoing conversation at Hallis Hall for literally a couple months.
Hub Arkish with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
It is the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Dan is out. Anthony Herron is in. It is our pleasure, as always, at 11 o'clock here on Wednesdays to welcome in Hub Arkish. Hub typically joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new used vehicles to choose from. This time, though, Hub's not using that line. He would if he could, believe me, but he's here. He's here in studio. We have the pleasure of being joined by One Hub Arkish. How you doing, man?
Well, I'm good, and I'm here in mainly because I will be following you from noon to 2. Lawrence is out today, so I'm going to get to sit in with him. I think you're doing some of that tomorrow, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah. They asked me about today and tomorrow. Tomorrow's our TV day where we tape all the shows. So,
okay.
But looking forward to today, and always looking forward to getting here and see you guys in person. Yeah,
let's get to the breaking news. Something that came out about a half an hour ago or so, and it's not a huge piece of news, but it does kind of tip a hand. Perhaps the Bears have released Tyler Bray. Bradley Sowell gets added to the roster. And Hub, I'll let you kind of divine what that may mean, but some of the writing may be on the wall here for this game against the Saints.
Yeah, I don't know that it necessarily means anything. Bradley Sowell has been a chess piece for him the last few weeks. Because he was on the roster opening day, they owe him his full year's salary anyway. So they're you know, cutting him, you might as well have another tight end to work with. As far as Tyler Bray, they released him, but he's going to go right back to the practice squad. My point being, he can practice with him the next 10 days anyway. So I think they get Sowell back. They get an extra body this way. We would hope it means that Mitch is close, but it would also be very surprising to me. So I don't know that I'd read too much into it.
How can the Bears go about trying to retool what they're doing up front on the offensive line?
You know, Anthony, Olin was tweeting this morning he and I go back and forth on this all the time because clearly the offensive line at the moment is a big problem. I'm going to call it the biggest problem. It's not the only problem, but until it gets better, I don't see how anything else gets better. So that's where the focus is. And there's we talked about this a little bit Sunday in postgame. There's three really different options here, or things to look at, I guess I should say. One is the switch between center and guard with James Daniels and Cody White here makes perfect sense. And if you're looking at the tape, you can see that they're both playing well enough. You can also see that James Daniels is going to be exceptional once he grows. I think Olin said he was 22. I think he's still 21.
I think you're right.
He just turned 21 in August. And you know, he's got four or five games. And the position is starting to come natural to him. But he's also doing all the line calls. And it may be that the communication is an issue. So that's number one. Now, they're not going to switch White here and Daniels back. That makes no sense. They could let Whitehair take the line calls back. You can do it from guard. I mean, we've seen it done before. Usually it's the center, but that's one option. Option number two, you look at that right guard position and you ask yourself, is Kyle Long healthy? Or is Kyle Long, because of the impact of all the injuries over the last 3 years, no longer physically able to do some of the things he used to be able to do? Kyle Long has not been the worst guard in the NFL. Again, everybody, you know, you start piling on. But he's missing enough plays, he's missing enough blocks that it is problematic. That's number two. Your options there, Ted Larson if the knee is healthy, which it's not right now, or do you really go big and take a chance on Rashad Coward? When we talked, when I've talked to coaches for the last year and a half now about Coward, it's unusual to take a developmental prospect like that and give him a roster spot for 2 seasons.
Yeah.
You know, you'd put him on the practice squad and think we can hide him. Obviously, they didn't think they could hide him. Excuse me. So the question is, are you ready to go big? You know, I mean, he came in the second half against Minnesota and really graded out well at a position he'd never played. He doesn't even practice at it. Then you go to number three, which I personally think is the biggest problem right now, and that is left tackle and Jarrell Leno. You cannot have major penalties, you know, every week, period. You can't have them from the offensive line every week, double period, and you can't have multiple major penalties every week from the same guy. And by the way, when he's not getting a major penalty, he's not playing that well either. You know, Cornelius Lucas was awful in the preseason, and I thought, oh boy, you got a problem here. When he stepped in for Bobby Massey on the right side, he played very well a couple weeks ago. His history is at left tackle. Do you take a chance there, and do you give Cornelius Lucas a start? I think these are all three things that they're looking at, and I don't mean to go run on here, guys, but I thought when we talk about tipping your hand, when Matt Nagy was asked Monday morning in London, you know, about self-scouting and what are you going to do, he said, I think I know the problem. He said, I'm never going to tell you, even after we figured it out, because I wouldn't do that, which means he's talking about players, not issue.
Yeah.
And then he said, you know, there's all kinds of ways of self-scouting, but at this point in the season, by week, you're self-scouting the players. And so I'm not saying they're going to make one of those moves, but I think that's what they're looking at right now.
I would imagine that's the case. I know a lot of Bears fans are hoping that's the case. Just point of procedure. I had it wrong, the James Daniels birthday in my Apple calendar, right? I had his birthday the October 13th. It was September. He just turned 22.
Okay.
Like literally 4 weeks ago, turned 22. So there he is, an aged veteran, James Daniels.
He's got a year's worth of beer in him.
Right. Yeah. Hopefully. But the other part is this. I want to go back to something you mentioned about Charles Leno Jr. here. And I think it's worth talking about in the larger context in the NFL. And I'm glad Hub's here. And Anthony, you've seen it. You've played it. Charles Leno in the post game of the Raiders aftermath mentioned that some of the calls on him were BS. He used the word. I didn't take that as sour grapes from a guy that's not playing well, because immediately after having said that, he said, I've got to find a way to play better, and put it all on his very broad shoulders. Is holding, in what way is holding being called differently? Why is this being attended to so hard by the NFL? And what does Charles Leno then, you know, from a left tackle one-on-one kind of standpoint, what does he have to do to avoid getting flag after flag just pelted at his very large body?
Olin and I had such little time in the post-post show the other night. I planned to get to this, and if I recall correctly, I don't think we got into the detail of how holding is being called differently in the NFL this year. It's essentially what's thought of as a lobster block. When plays are going away, and the Bears do it, so many teams who run zone schemes do it, where the backside of that play, your assignment is to try to cut off the defensive lineman. If there's a stretch play or a sort of an outside zone play that's going to the opposite side of a formation. So if it's running towards Bobby Massey as opposed to Charles Leno, Charles Leno still has an assignment on that play. He's not just there standing around. He doesn't have his thumb somewhere he shouldn't have it. He's not just working up immediately to the linebacker. Quite frequently, it's trying to get his head across the head of a defensive lineman who's there to cut them off from their backside pursuit. So while that's happening, what offensive linemen would get away with quite frequently in the NFL in years past was to be able to very briefly, even if they weren't clasping, but to get their hands around the outside of the framework of a defender, thus allowing them to stunt the guy's momentum and sort of take them over in that manner. It's something that's been an issue in the league that defensive coaches or coaches in general have raised as an issue for a while. And finally, this offseason, the NFL kind of got together and said, all right, you know what? We'll start calling that. What they noticed was that, man, that's happening a lot. We're calling it way more than anybody really wants offenses to be stunted in the NFL.
Yeah.
So they got together a few weeks into the season and said, all right, let's back off and call it less. Multiple of Charles Leno's holding calls this season. I mean, in pass rush, he's been exploited in that manner and gotten some of those calls and hands to the face and everything else. There's been multiple times where that old school lobster block that they're still calling is, or they're beginning to call is holding now, has been called on him. But that's what the difference is supposed to be this season.
Here's the problem with it, though, guys. And Anthony, couldn't agree with you more. And I think some of it's BS. I mean, you got to make it fair, you know, both ways. But the reason that Matt Nagy came out after the Vikings game and said no, they were the right calls, talking about the calls on Charles. We haven't heard anything about London, which is when, you know, Charles complained. I don't know if he complained, when he mentioned it, let me put it that way, is there is a reason also that NFL officiating crews make the round of every NFL training camp in August. And they go in to talk about the rules and what changes have been made and what to look out for. And it was explained to everybody prior to the start of the season, this is what we're going to do. So whether it's fair or not is not the issue. You still have to stop doing it.
Charles Leno wasn't caught off guard by this being flagged for it again.
You go back and look, I have yet to see a flag on him that I could make an argument, man, you got screwed, as opposed to some of this, you know, roughing the passer stuff, which is ridiculous, you know. Yeah. I don't know how you don't do that, but this is the problem, you know, and there's a bigger issue here, guys, and I've been, I guess, somewhat alone on this, but for 3 years now, I've been trying to figure out why Charles Leno was the left tackle you wanted to build around anyway. I mean, he's not a bad football player, but there's nothing exceptional there. He really struggles with any kind of speed rush, you know, and now, you know, you've got, and by the way, It was two seasons ago that he led the NFL in penalties by offensive linemen with 13. He cut it in half last year to 7 and was still, I think, either second or third in the league. And now he's got either 8 or 9 through 5 weeks. I mean, this is not a new phenomena. And that's why, to me, of all the things you got to look at here, either Charles got to make some changes overnight, or you got to wonder how much longer you're going to tolerate this.
With the Bears at offensive tackle, my contention has been, as soon as Matt Nagy got hired, was that there are elements of the system that I anticipated him running that could basically protect both Charles Leno and Bobby Massey, neither of whom is a dominant offensive tackle either on the left or the right side, but both passable guys in the proper system. And my contention has been with Matt Nagy's system, the lateral nature of it, the quick game that should be a focused part of it, that you could get by with Leno and Massey at offensive tackle. Part of what has surprised me greatly is that they haven't enhanced the depth behind either tackle at this point, either if Leno Massey struggled, if either guy goes down with injury like Cornelius Lucas having to go in a couple of weeks back. Why you haven't added more depth to that position is beyond me.
I've been screaming to draft a left tackle for 3 or 4 years, but one more point in fairness to Charles and Bobby too. Until Sunday, the pass protection's actually been pretty good.
It's been okay.
Pass protection has not been a problem. So this is why when we start pouncing on
the
offense.
Was that from the Green Bay game?
Yeah, but even in that game, now you're talking about 8 new starters, a bunch of looks they'd never – well, it's still a problem. You're right.
Right.
But, I mean, at least in terms of scheme and blocking and coaching.
But there were reasons explainable for it.
You know, it's not all about the offensive line, but particularly in the run game – which I have been maintaining for almost a year now is a bigger problem with the offense than Mitch Trubisky. That's where the problem is with the offensive line.
So that's kind of a question here too, because there's not a left tackle out there you just go grab, right?
How realistic could a Trent Williams discussion be?
Well, it could be very real because he doesn't want to play there. The
right.
problem,
even with Gruden being fired, he still does not want to show up.
The problem is that you don't have next April's first round pick.
Nope.
Oakland already has that. Do you now want to go into 21 and 22? Now Washington, if you get up to the trade deadline, they don't have anybody else, might take a 21 or a 22. But Trent Williams is, if not the best left tackle in football, you know, Tyron Smith, but he's not healthy anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's in that conversation. You saw what Laramie Tunsil just cost, which was kind of outrageous, but Houston got taken to the cleaner on that one.
Yeah, they did.
So, I would love to see Trent Williams in Chicago, and I don't know how you do it. You know, I don't know what you give up to get him.
So this is part of the conversation that the Texans got killed for in trading for Laramie Tunsil the way that they did. You're in an AFC where you're good, you're fun, you're an entertaining team, and you're trying to get Deshaun Watson killed all at the same time, but that's neither here nor there. You're not beating the Chiefs. You're not beating the Patriots, and it's not happening even if it's this any given Sunday kind of thing. I'm sorry, but that's where I stand from. I think you might be able to, given 5 weeks of offense, you might be able to make a similar statement about where the Bears might be at. We talk about Super Bowl quality defense all the time, but are you a left tackle away from getting it right? And that's a question.
The Bears have to feel like they are, though. Just like the Texans for the position they're in have to feel like they are as well, because you're coming towards the end of your rookie quarterback, the guy who you want to be your quarterback for the future. You're coming towards the end of his rookie deal, where Deshaun Watson is going to get a new deal here.
Yeah.
Mitch either is no longer going to be a Bear within the next year or two, or he's going to get a new deal that's going to eat up a lot of the cap space. So it's compete now time, or it's not. And so that's where part of that decision factors into. If we're going to compete now, then we may have to leverage or mortgage a bit of the future to feel like we're putting ourselves in the best position to win currently.
Yeah, and Connor, not that Bears fans care, but I don't totally agree with you on Houston. I mean, that defense is very – not as good as the Bears,
no.
But it's got a couple players that are in Khalil Mack's league. I mean, look at what Whitney Merciless is doing now. He's been missing for a couple years. J.J. Watt is still one of the three best defensive players in football. And offensively – if they could ever keep Will Fuller, you know, on the field along with DeAndre Hopkins and now Kenny Stills, they were an offensive line away. And the two kids they drafted, Sharping from Northern Illinois, I think is going to be really good. I just don't know if he's going to be a right tackle or a guard. Tytus Howard is going to be really good. Now you plug in Laramie Tunsil, they may have completely solved their offensive. It's only been 4 or 5 weeks, you know. So I think that what they paid was exorbitant.
Oh yeah.
But if I'm right about Sharping and Howard, and suddenly this becomes one of the better offensive lines in football, and you see what Deshaun Watson can do,
right?
They overpaid, but I do understand why they did it.
Fair point. I guess the other question then would have to be, if you're giving up draft capital for Trent Williams and you are wrong on Mitch Trubisky, then your quarterback solution isn't coming from one of those draft picks that give up.
But it doesn't matter because Trent Williams still now makes you exponentially better on the offensive line. And you got to solve the quarterback problem either way, whether Mitch is right or not. You've also got, we think, an offensive line issue right now. Now, the problem with Trent Williams is he's probably pushing 30.
He is. He's got to be 30, late 20s. Yeah.
Now, a lot of offensive linemen.
Is he over 30 by now?
I'll look at him.
A lot of offensive linemen stay in their prime into their mid-30s, but you know, look at what's going on with Kyle. We don't know. You certainly would never pay the Laremy Tunsil price for Trent Williams at this stage of his career.
32, July 19th, so he'd play all of his next season at the age 32 year. Top of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Fan four packs are a fantastic way to enjoy Chicago Wolves hockey. Four tickets, four hot dogs, four sodas, one large popcorn, one low price. To get yours, visit ChicagoWolves.com. We are winners. We are the Wolves. Hub Arkish is in at 11 o'clock on Wednesday, as he always is. Remember, Fridays, he's yours. He is free to the people on Friday mornings on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Anthony Herron is in for Dan. There is, speaking of top draft picks and what you pay to get them, the Bears have a top draft pick that has been absent in two very real ways this last week. A lot of people have asked, texted, called, and just kind of worried in their homes about Roquan Smith, how he's doing, and where he was against the Oakland Raiders. That's where we'll start when we come back. Anthony Herron's in for Dan. He's Hub Arkish. I'm Connor. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score. Bernstein and McKnight here on 670 The Score. Dan is out. Anthony Herron is in. And we've got Hub Arkish in studio as well. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Your phone calls with Hub on Friday, as always. If you want to lob one in here or there, we got a little time left before Hub takes over the Lawrence Holmes experience, too. That's at noon.
Just to put a pin in what we were starting to discuss there, just driving around black and Green Bay, that pretty much explains it to everyone also. That didn't take much effort for folks to recognize part of it.
I think that's a worthy conversation. We'll get to the Bears defense, Roquan Smith, and all that kind of stuff in a minute.
All right, sure.
But Hub, you know the lifestyle up in Green Bay. You've traveled up there enough. I went to high school a half an hour south of Green Bay. Anthony played for Green Bay Packers. So I was asking Anthony during the break, if it's because the story we got told is, as you know, high schoolers and all that kind of stuff, was that players for the Packers were always told by, you know, their player reps or HR or whatever it was at Green Bay, don't buy the nice car. Don't buy the Lamborghini. Don't buy this, that, the other thing. Because if you pull in to anywhere around town or anywhere within an hour and a half, everyone's going to know you play for the Green Bay Packers. No one will give you a moment's rest. Just buy a nice Ford F-150 or something like that. Buy yourself a nice big truck. That'll be the nice car that you drive, and that's it. Nobody will bug you.
If you're driving around Green Bay looking like you, then it would be, yes, more of a dead giveaway driving around Green Bay, Wisconsin, than, oh, he's not just some random civilian.
Of course.
He's someone with money and perhaps status and influence.
Sure.
Yeah, when I was walking and driving around Green Bay, it was pretty quickly was, oh, you play for the Pack? And I was on the practice squad. My teammates didn't even know my name. I got folks running up with my rookie card. Hey, Mr. Herron, and this and that. I'm a giant black person in Green Bay. It stuck out.
There is a little bit of an extension of that story. And I love Green Bay. I mean, mm-hmm. I have nothing but respect for the organization.
It's an NFL city that feels like a college town.
Take my whole family, all our kids, grandkids, up to Door County for a week or two every summer, just going, which is, again, north of there an hour or so. But that whole area is just fantastic. But one of the things about it is that the minority population is almost non-existent. Mm. And so, you know, the extension of this is you go back to 93 and Reggie White deciding to go to Green Bay stunned every other African-American player in the NFL.
Yeah. Right.
You can go to Green Bay.
Yeah.
And the Packers were on the same timeline as everybody else as far as breaking the color line and the growth of minority, you know, population in the league. But let's be fair. I mean, let's be fair. I'm talking to you. I mean, it's tougher to go up to Green Bay, you know, just culturally. I mean, you know, looking for food you like. I mean, you know, places to go, things to do. A lot of it's not there, you know, and it's changed, you know, more in recent years. I think it's very comfortable for everybody now. But for a long time, it was a part of the decision process for an African-American player was, do I want to live there? You know, because it's not like any kind of urban environment that, you know, you might be used to.
Siberia is what it was known as. In my rookie year was 2001 when I spent the majority of it in Green Bay, and everyone, all my guys around the league, oh man, you in Siberia. What's that like being in Siberia, man? I feel bad for you. But for me as a Hawkeye, like I played my college football at Iowa.
I had to feel somewhat similar.
Actually, I was just this morning talking on my Big Ten show about what it was like being in Iowa City, having, I mean, you know, people like graduating classes of four who were just from these tiny little, yeah, you can't even call them towns, whatever the term would be for something that's smaller than a town.
Right.
That's what some of these people are from, who'd never met a black person before they met me or other black people, black athletes around campus. And so that was an experience that I had had in Iowa City in college. So then taking that to the first team I was with was Detroit. They released me at the end of camp. Then I get signed by Green Bay on the practice squad there and spend the bulk of my rookie year there before Detroit brings me back in and activates me. And with Green Bay, it felt like Iowa City. It did feel very much like it was an NFL team in what felt like a college town. And it had that same energy, that same tenor to it, the love that folks have for nothing else but the Green Bay Packers. So that, spending the bulk of my rookie year there, was a fun aspect of just a professional sports town that still felt very collegiate.
There's a love for that team up there.
It really
there is. It's unlike a lot of other places I
own
saw.
It, Connor.
Just ask them.
Their investment.
I watched grown men weep when Donald Driver won Dancing with the Stars. Weep. Like tears of joy when it happened. It was absolutely insane. One of the things we were talking about before we hit the break here as it concerns the Bears is something that's really kind of gripped, I think, Bears fans, and that's this aura of invincibility surrounding the defense was pierced some, and it was done by John Gruden of all people in an Oakland Raiders team that not many thought all that highly of.
And the disco breaks out.
A lot of it. Oh, God. And it taking shots left and right. But the location of Roquan Smith, both in actuality and once on the field, has been called into question some. And I think the videos that are circulating of the Raiders running back, Josh Jacobs, running in, has him wiped out on two separate occasions. And that's got people asking whether or not the middle of that defense is perhaps not as stout as they'd thought.
So, like, maybe Roquan Smith is never going to play quality football again?
Well, I mean, as we were talking about this during the break, and I know Anthony can support me on this. Pick any player you want, folks. Give me Tom Brady. You know, give me Pat Mahomes. You name it. You know, give me Aaron Donald. I will take any game tape of your choice and find 3, 4, 5 plays where he got washed out or he got beat or whatever. It's just, you know, you got to study the tape. Roquan Smith actually didn't play that bad. He didn't play his game.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't what you would hope for Sunday, nor was anybody else on that defense. So let's start by taking out arguably the best 5 technique in the NFC out of the game after play number 6, who is always in front of him, who is part of what they accomplish in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Let's also take the other 5 technique off the field, who's been out with a broken hand for the last 2-3 weeks. You know, I love Roy Robertson Harris.
Right.
I think he can be a starter. He doesn't have to be a 4.
Mm-hmm.
But when he's got to become Akeem Hicks, he's not that guy. You know, and Olin made a great point. We were talking the other day. The other thing is Richie Incognito is the dirtiest player in the NFL.
Yeah.
They were cutting guys all day long. The defensive line is where the problems started. It wasn't at inside linebacker. And then everybody else on the, you know, the secondary wasn't all that bad, actually. I mean, they were playing their game as best they could. But here's the bigger issue, guys. Roquan Smith owes us nothing in terms
Thank
of explanation.
You. Thank you.
If this is personal, it's personal. But if you're going to take that stand when he comes back, come up with some type of explanation other than the fact that I owe you nothing. You know, tell us, hey, it's personal. I don't want to get into it, but this is, you know, how it start, not how it started, but something that fans can accept, because I can't go to my boss and say, I'm not going to work this week and it's personal and the reasons are none of your business. And that's kind of what the fan base is feeling right now. And so, if he wants to stay.
But I think his bosses know what it is, though.
Well,
I just think his
do.
Bosses oh, are yeah. respecting his privacy and not sharing it with us.
Yeah, but I, again, it's, you know this. It's different. He's a pro football player.
He's a public figure.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a de facto
and,
public
and so
figure.
All I'm saying is I don't want to know any of his personal business, but I also don't want to be told it's none of your business, because fans who pay $150
a game. But you did just say it was none of our business, huh?
I believe it's none of our business, but I don't want to be told that.
You just don't want to hear it.
I'm just telling you where this fan thing is coming
right,
from.
Right,
yeah,
right, right.
I mean, me personally, I don't need to know anymore. I mean, he was gone, he's back. You know, let's watch him play football. But the way that the Bears Nation is reacting is because even if they know it's not their business, they feel because he's Roquan Smith, because he's making how many million dollars or whatever, and because they're paying the freight, and tell them no about it. And that's why you're going to get this silly conversation. But I mean, personally, no, it's none of our business.
Yeah, Bears fans, you're not. You're not entitled to know about it. If there's something that ends up being, you know, outside the bounds of the law, if there's something that ends up being public knowledge, then sure, it should be addressed. And you know, I've had this discussion on Twitter or whatever with a few other folks too. It's not if Roquan Smith has something in his private life that is happening that the Bears know about, that his employers, who are the ones, you know, I suppose legitimately paying the check. It's, you know, whoever's family name is on the Bears' paychecks that are there. If he's addressed that with his bosses, and to me, I applaud the level of secrecy that the Bears and their locker room were able to keep around this Roquan Smith scenario, because I'm utterly shocked. I'm sure you guys are too, that there's not anything more credible than like those first couple of nights or whatever. Like, I'm getting people texting me images of vehicles and asking if I know what Roquan Smith drives, and I don't know, but not. So that's debunked
Beamer,
when it's out there and everything.
Beamer, not Ferrari.
Okay, all right, okay. So that explains that.
And that's why the media didn't jump on it, because we all knew. But here's the problem, though, is you can't avoid fans and some media, unfortunately, that are going to insist on trying to connect the dots.
Mm-hmm.
There is no dots to connect from he missed the Vikings game for personal business to he didn't play his best game. I mean, there are so many reasons they stunk Sunday.
Yes.
And it does happen. Why is nobody benching Patrick Mahomes or all over the Chiefs, who are never going to win again?
Huh.
Because at home on Sunday night, they got their asses kicked worse than the Bears did.
The teeth kicked.
You know, I wrote about this last week. I don't mean to get excited about this, but I mean, the whole London game thing sucks. Nobody should have to do it in season. You want to make more money for the owners. You want to market the NFL. Have teams spend a whole week in Europe in the preseason. Play a bunch of exhibition games. They're playing every city in Europe. But in season, to make these guys, on top of everything else they go through to try and perform, travel 4,000 miles through 6 time zones, you know, and you know, getting more swelled and inflamed on planes and pressurized and everything.
Yeah,
it's, and I know it's no excuse, because the Raiders and the Bears both did it, and the Raiders played but the Raiders had the same experience last year. It's not
And they
fair.
Learned from it and it, went out yeah. there on Monday as well, opposed to whatever, getting there Friday.
Yeah, of all the things that Matt got a little testy about, that's the one I didn't appreciate, because he immediately came out and said, I don't want to hear about this money. It had nothing to do with it.
Nobody
I think it
knows
probably,
how that works.
You don't, but you look at the results and
yeah.
you say,
well,
whatever. Right. But I'm not blaming Matt Nagy.
Yeah.
My point is they should never have to go through it in the first place. And it's just one of the reasons that the Bears, you know, Miami last year was the same game. Nobody's talking about it.
Just before we move on from Roquan, the speculation that surrounds everything that went down with Roquan, in my opinion, is not Roquan Smith's responsibility. It is not the Chicago Bears' responsibility. The speculation that happens with that is on us. So all of us who are speculating about what happened, and I think the media is 100% doing their job. The media should be asking the questions.
Yes.
Should be perhaps even trying to figure out what happened.
Definitely.
I believe the Bears are doing their job as well by protecting, in this case, and for whatever reason they're protecting him, for whatever it was that took place in his personal life, they're also doing their job in protecting their player, their investment, their person who's involved with the organization.
The media and the Bears don't work together.
Right.
There is an
right.
adversarial relationship. That can be a good one, you know, the one that actually can work. It just doesn't have to necessarily be the way that it has with the Roquan story.
When Roquan goes out there and sacks Teddy Bridgewater next week, it's not going to be a story anymore.
I do want to say one thing. I'd be the only person left in the United States of America actually defending the media for a minute here, but in fairness, because I'm in that room with everybody
yeah,
every day,
right.
from the moment Roquan came back and went back on the practice field, there's about, I don't know how many, I've never counted, there's 20 to 25 of us that are in that room, you mm-hmm. know, every day. I haven't heard a single question. Nobody's going back.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's still digging.
Mm-hmm.
It is his personal business. It affected the football team when he was off the field.
Right.
Since he's been back on the field, I haven't heard anybody in the media going after it. It's the fans.
Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Northwestern Football at Ryan Field when the Wildcats, led by Big Ten Coach of the Year Pat Fitzgerald, host Ohio State, Iowa, Purdue, and Minnesota in Big Ten play. Single-game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at nusports.com. I want to get into something that affected Roquan a little bit, and that Bears defense too. Is cut blocking, though it's illegal technically, is that a repeatable thing against the Bears defense? Is that something offenses can game plan and say, okay, here's how the Raiders did it. Granted, it's dirty, and we don't have Richie Incognito to go take out somebody's knees, but here's something like it you can repeat. Here is, what I'm asking is this a weakness that's exploitable at the very edges of the rules.
Here's why it's a bad idea. I'll let Anthony speak to the football and physical and technical part of it. I promise you that a week from Sunday, I don't know who the officiating crew is, but Matt Nagy's going to get to him an hour and a half before the game and say, I want you to be aware of this. I've got cut-ups in the locker room if you want to come and see them. They did it to us on every play in London. You can't let that happen because it is against the rules. And why Tony Carreni's crew let it continue all game, I don't know. Is it the reason the Bears got? No. Again, the Bears got beat up physically. That's why they lost. But it's just one more aspect of it. And if you make that part of your game plan and the officials won't give it to you, then you're kind of screwed.
And specifically the cut block itself is not illegal. It's the chop block.
Chop block.
Where you're engaged with a player in the upper body, and then also someone else comes and hits you below the legs. Or even if you're not engaged with someone up top, but someone comes and cuts blocks you from behind, then that's where things can get illegal. And that's where there were certainly moments in the game where a lot of Bears defenders seemed to begin to get hesitant after they got blocked low a few different times up front. And especially when the play, like we were talking about play going away early, if there's some sort of, you know, zone scheme that's working laterally, you're on the backside of the play, like we were talking about it earlier from the Charles Leonard perspective, and here talking opposite of that with the Bears defense as the play is going away and you got Richie Incognito or someone diving on the back of your legs, his job is really to get his hat, his helmet across that Bears defensive lineman in front of them before he cut blocks. That's really the legal way that's supposed to take place. This, you know, frequently enough, the offensive lineman doesn't end up, even though they know the snap count, they got the angle, you know, on you and everything, they don't always get across the bow. They don't always get in front of that defender to cut him off. Doesn't stop them from throwing that cut block usually, though. They end up still diving at the guy's legs. Sometimes it gets called quite frequently. It doesn't. And this is where no Bilal Nichols, no Akeem Hicks, this is where we see where the previous week, where the Bears defensive front with backups in the game, with Roy Robertson Harris, with Nick Williams out there, with Abdullah Anderson out there, they were still able to get Minnesota into predictable downs and distances where, all right, we can play fun. We can play finesse football. All right, it's third long. Let's go get Kirk Cousins. Let's sick him. They couldn't get the Raiders into that because the Oakland offensive line just brutalized them, just rolled them off the ball whenever they felt like it. So they were never able to dictate terms to the Raiders, and that's where – you know, if the Bears get pushed around again, then yes, they'll be susceptible to cut blocks. But it just shows, you know, some of the frailty that's there, not just the Bears defense at large, but when the Bears depth is sapped, where you got Nick Williams playing whatever, however many snaps he played against the Raiders, as opposed to however many he played the previous week against Minnesota, that's a different deal. It's one thing for Roy Robertson Harris to come in passing scenarios and dominate people physically. It's another thing to say, hey, RRH, go play 40 or 50 snaps. Mm-hmm. That's a different thing. You're counting on a guy to play at a different level than what he normally has to sustain.
Connor, I just need to quickly qualify what I just said. Richie Incognito is now the dirtiest player in the NFL.
By technicality.
That Vontaze Burfict has been suspended for the rest of the season.
Yes, so that's form an your important own, qualifier. Yeah,
so form your own opinions about John Gruden.
He's the dirtiest by TKO in a lot of different ways. We'll hit the break here coming up in a little bit, talk a little bit more football. There are a couple of texts that I think are interesting. People asking you questions and want a little... Yeah, a couple. There are some other ones, too.
Pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, no, there's some other ones, too. Don't worry about it. We let you down. Anthony Herron is in for Dan. Hub Arkish is here as well. You've got him for the afternoon, too. Your lunch 2 hours is going to be with Hub. He's in for Lawrence. This is 670 The Score. A lot of thank yous to hand out this morning. A huge, huge Anthony Herron-sized thank you goes to Anthony Herron.
All right, that's a big one.
For hanging out with us this morning. Anthony is all over your televisions and radios all week long, but you've got Pac-12 football this weekend. That is Utah and, gosh, I keep on forgetting.
Oregon State.
Slate.
That's right. Utah and Oregon State.
You get the trip to Corvallis.
We'll see. Maybe next year's backup to Mitchell Trubisky might be on display. Jake Luton.
You
talented
like him
quarterback
that much.
Who's going to be a mid to late round pick. We'll see. Maybe next year is the year that Ryan Pace finally drafts another QB.
Well, he said he'd do it every year.
That's what he claimed.
He's on schedule to do it. Big thank you to Anthony Herron. Thanks to Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, Hub Arkish, who is in now and will be in for Lawrence Holmes from noon until 2. Transition with Hub coming up in just a couple. Producers were Sawaski, Camp, Diaz, and Gertsch. Kevbo had the updates. Tomorrow, Matt Miller is on. We'll continue. You know, if you're talking about Luton being a potential draft pick there, Miller's got all the info there. We'll talk college. We'll talk pro. We'll have surprises. Dan will be back. So that'll be fun, too.
Hallmark Film is coming up at noon. Transition's on the way. It's Bernstein McKnight 6-7.
I want to hear if he was forgiven. Is what I want to know.
Sure. Well, he's got to seek it, right? You seek forgiveness from people before you seek it from the Lord Almighty, I believe, is the process. He's free to ask for it when he comes back. 670 The Score.